This is Love Your Work. On this show, we help you make it as a creative entrepreneur. I am David Cadavy. I've been a solopreneur for more than 10 years. I'm an international award-winning designer. I have written a bunch of best-selling books, including Design for Hackers and The Heart to Start. From Love Your Work headquarters in Colombia, yes, the country, I have interviewed titans of industry like Steve Case. I've interviewed best-selling authors like Seth Godin and James Altucher. I have interviewed experts on behavioral science, creators from dancers to a chef to a Hollywood set designer, visionaries on the cutting edge of creative monetization, whether that be self-publishing or blockchain technology. And from these conversations, I pull out lessons to share with you. I want to help you find your unique voice as a creative entrepreneur. I want to help you nail the right mindset to succeed. I want to help you be the first to capitalize on new opportunities to make a living making your art. So if you are new here, welcome. Again, I am David Cadavy. If you want to join us here on Love Your Work every Thursday, please hit subscribe on your podcast app. And if you want to get my free creative productivity toolkit, sign up over at cadavy.net/tools. Brave is a new browser that is reinventing the attention economy. Brave does block ads, but it is not just an ad blocker. It also blocks scripts that slow down your browsing experience, that invade your privacy, and that leave you vulnerable to hackers. Not the Design for Hackers hackers, the hackers that are bad hackers. So since much of the internet currently runs on the ad-supported model, Brave doesn't stop there with the blocking of ads. They've invented a cryptocurrency that just might change creative monetization forever. I'm really excited about it. You can use the Basic Attention Token, or BAT as it is called, to pay creators whose content you consume most, or as a site owner, you can earn BAT. So in fact, I have actually earned some BAT myself. Now in the future, Brave says they will be paying you for browsing content. Now, how does that work? We're going to talk about that and more in today's conversation. I'm talking to Jonathan Sampson, who is Brave's Senior Developer Relations Specialist. We are going to talk about how did we end up with an internet where we actually need a browser like Brave. Brave's founder and CEO actually invented JavaScript, yet Brave blocks a ton of JavaScript. Now, how did that happen? That's pretty interesting. Brave claims to save you about $23 a month and give you a browsing experience of up to 8 times faster than Chrome. Now, where do those gains come from? And how is it possible that Brave could pay you for browsing the web? Where would the money come from? Who would be missing out on that money? I have been using Brave regularly for a few months now. I really, really enjoy it. And as we're going to talk about in this conversation, if you would like to support the work that I do, download Brave at my URL, which is cadavy.net/brave. If you stick with it for 30 days, Brave is going to reward me with $5 worth of BAT, or the Basic Attention Token. Again, you can do that at cadavy.net/brave. And I am super proud to have Backblaze sponsoring the show, because I know that Backblaze is going to save the butt of somebody out there. Imagine this. Imagine you tried to start up your computer tomorrow and your hard drive had failed. Everything was gone. I mean, everything. Do you have a plan for that? Most of us, we have some documents on the cloud, but let me tell you, that is not a backup plan. What about everything else? What about redundancy? How long would it take to get you back up to speed? I'm going to tell you more later about how Backblaze can have you back up and running fast. The only catch is you have to be a Backblaze customer in order for them to save you. So for now, go to backblaze.com/loveyourwork, get their fully featured 15-day free trial. That is backblaze.com/loveyourwork. Now here is Jonathan Sampson from Brave Browser. I'm with Jonathan Sampson from the Brave browser. And Jonathan, it seems like there's so many browsers out there. I think a lot of us have settled on our favorite browsers and maybe we've switched a couple times. Why is it that we need yet another browser?
Great question, man. I actually came from working on one of the other browsers. So before I was at Brave, I was working at Microsoft. At Microsoft, we even introduced a new browser within the company there. We had Internet Explorer and, you know, wound up introducing Edge itself. I'd say by and large, the vast majority of the browsers have all become pretty homogenous. I mean, they're doing pretty much the same thing. You're getting some subtle, you know, UI differences between different browsers. For the large part, there's really only three or so major browser engines in play today. You've got, you know, Chromium's Blink. You had Trident at Microsoft, which is Edge HTML now. You had Presto, which was kind of abandoned, and then Gecko with Firefox. Brave is built off the Blink engine, but we kind of saw this niche that was forming, or maybe a larger groundswell movement where you look at different browsers out there, and the browsers have kind of, you know, stagnated. They're not really doing a whole lot. The web development aspect is getting kind of exciting. But what really started to explode was the adoption of ad and tracker blockers. And so you kind of see these things grow end over end each year. And that was fantastic. But one of the problems that exist with these is that they're mere extensions on top of API structures inside browsers. And one of the most popular browsers happens to be produced and distributed by an advertisement company. So it gets a little bit difficult to see, okay, how much liberty
Chrome,
do these...
Right?
Well, yeah, I'm not going to name names or anything, but essentially you start to see like, okay, how difficult could it be to have complete liberty with regards to what's happening in your browser session when you're dependent upon the APIs that are offered by the world's leading browser today? And so one of the things with Brave, the fact that we were able to spin up our own browser meant that we weren't beholden to anybody else's standards or rules. If we felt the need to implement some changes to some APIs, we can just go and do that. We don't have to petition somebody else to get on board with us. And so one of the early examples of this was like autoplay media. Whenever you drop into a website, you'll start to have audio producing elements somewhere in the page, but you can't quite figure out where they are. And so one of the things that we did was modified the underlying APIs that enabled that feature, and we actually blocked it and made it so that it would prompt the end user to say, hey, there's an element that wants to make some noise here. Would you like to permit it? Would you like to permit it indefinitely? And so we could start to make those changes because we introduced a new browser to the market, which gives us the liberty to do basically everything that is kind of laid out in our roadmap and vision.
And can you give us an idea of a little bit of the history of how it was that we arrived at a point where we need a browser like Brave?
Absolutely. This story goes back 20 plus years. For anyone who's listened to podcasts with Brendan Eich, they might have heard the story or a similar rendition of it once or twice as well. You go back to the early 90s whenever JavaScript was still being developed. I think it was 10 days in May. You start to see before the web had this dynamic language, there really was not much risk involved in going online. There wasn't really any information that was going to be stolen from you or anything like that. The web was largely stateless at the time, meaning if you were to visit a web page and then refresh the page, the server that you got the page from has no knowledge of any previous interactions with it. It doesn't store a little bit of information and understand kind of a dialogue between you and that server. And so around this time was created this concept of cookies, which are small portable pieces of information that are transmitted to and from servers whenever you're requesting pages. And so this was a way for web servers to kind of persist a little bit of information on the user's machine so that it could have a more meaningful relationship over time. And so if, for instance, you wanted to store some of your credentials, maybe your username inside of a cookie, you wouldn't have to fill out that cookie or fill out that form every single time you went to the website, or even sites where you could modify your user interface. Those modifications could be stored inside of a cookie on your machine as opposed to in a database on the server end or something. Well, this is all really great, but cookies could also be used with third parties as well. So if you were going to website A.com and website A.com had a script from website B.com, well, now you were going to start to be sending and receiving cookies from both of these domains, even though you are only going to website A. And so all of this kind of came together with the culmination of other things like the image elements on web pages, where now if you loaded a picture from website C.com, well, now you're dealing with cookies from website A.com, website B.com, and website C.com because they're requests for the picture. And so this kind of gave birth to what are known as tracking pixels. And so this whole tracking space kind of just exploded, kind of like this Cambrian explosion almost, and came out of nowhere. And quite impressive as a technologist, a developer, how this vibrant economy kind of exploded. But all this power kind of became abused with time. And so we started seeing just an unprecedented amount of tracking happening all across the web. And so you'd start to see, you know, one website serving up dozens, sometimes 70 or more trackers. And these are following you around on various different websites. So, if we go back to that earlier example where I said you could be loading a picture from website C.com. Well, if you load that same picture on 10 different websites, within the request is being made to that one server, but during 10 different individual browsing sessions. And so website C.com can start to understand who you are and specifically where you go on the web. And so if we were to substitute website C.com with a large advertising company, well, now they start to learn more about you than maybe your own primary physician does, because they know what you're searching, they know where you're going, they know what you're buying. And so this kind of just got completely out of hand. And so we saw the birth of the ad blocker, and this really kind of exploded and started doing quite well. And there was a lot of controversy around ad blocking whenever it first became a thing. But then we come back to that first part where we started, ad blockers are basically only at liberty to do, with what power is yielded to them by the platform on which they're built. And so if they're shipping on Chrome or in Microsoft Edge or in Firefox, they can really only do what is afforded to them. And so Brave, we really didn't want to have those limitations. You know, we really wanted to say, okay, if we need to go a step further, if we want to block earlier in the exchange between the client and the server, then we really need to be able to do that for the sake of the user. And so that's kind of one of the reasons why we felt, another browser is needed and why we're taking this path.
So very ironically, your CEO, Brendan Eich, is basically one of the inventors of JavaScript, which is one of the main technologies that you're blocking when you're blocking these tracking scripts. Is that correct?
Right. We're blocking it in a careful way. So it's not a complete, chopping off JavaScript, although you can do that. And there are many security conscious users who do that. They completely disable JavaScript. But it's quite poetic, really, that the very thing that Brendan created back in 94 or so has both given just vibrant life to the web, as well as empowered some very devious people to do some rather unsavory things. And so it's neat to see that, Brendan, here we are a little more than two decades later, has now come to fight the beast that he created or that he enabled with his creation, using many of the same technologies that he built at that time too. So Brave itself, a lot of people may not even realize this, Brave is actually built with JavaScript as well, the front end of it. And so, 24 years ago, Brendan created this language. It was then co-opted by bad actors who started to do some very malicious things with it. And then here we are 24 years later. Brendan is building a mechanism by which we can stop what has been taking place for the last 10, 15 years or so.
Can you go into further detail about the malicious or unsavory things that people are doing with technology like JavaScript?
Yeah, definitely. JavaScript, there's a lot of stuff that JavaScript is capable of doing for very good reasons. And so, for instance, JavaScript is able to detect what type of machine you're on, what type of web browser you're using, what your operating system is. Even if you have certain plugins installed, like Flash or a PDF reader or something like that. And all of this is very helpful to making a diverse and vibrant web that works, that is, forward compatible. It's not going to break in the future. Developers like myself, we use these things so that we know basically, okay, we can look at the full array of screen resolutions of our visitors coming to our website. So we know how to design maybe the next version of the website to accommodate the vast majority, if not all of the users. And so by having access to that information, we make the web a better place. But then there's the opposite side of the coin, maybe the underworld or something like that. I forget what it's called in Stranger Things, where there's the reverse of all of this, where a lot of that technology can be used for very bad reasons as well. And so one of the big ones is fingerprinting. And so fingerprinting, we all kind of understand you may not know who I am, but if you can find my fingerprints in two different locations, well, then you kind of know that it was the same person that was in those two locations, because fingerprints are pretty much globally universal and distinct with individuals. And so with JavaScript, there's a way that advertisers and trackers and bad actors can fingerprint your machine using many of those same functions that we use to do good stuff on the web. So for instance, they can look at what's called the user agent string, and that's that little bit of text, a little bit of information inside the browser that says what operating system you're using, what browser you're using, what plugins you might have installed. They can also query the browser for your screen resolution. For instance, I'm on a 3440 by 1440 monitor, which is a very wide monitor, which is not very common. So that would distinguish me from some other visitors. There's just a series of things that can be done to fingerprint users and help advertisers track my activity on the web. And so this is something that they really could only do with JavaScript. There's some tracking that can be done without it. Server-side tracking, but it's kind of, you know, slower, more clumsy. It's not always as reliable. And so this is the type of thing that we've been kind of watching evolve over the years and combat in real time along with the developments of it.
Now, what about things like malware?
Yeah, malware is another big one. Malware, and in particular, in the last year or so, cryptojacking as well. Cryptojacking, for anyone who's not familiar with that term, you know, we've all seen kind of the explosive growth of things like Bitcoin and Ethereum, these cryptocurrencies in online news and such. And what we saw in the last year was basically some of these coins or some of these tokens can be generated even in the browser using JavaScript, which is not super powerful. But there are things like Monero, which can be generated. And so when people started to realize this, what they started to do was infiltrate traditional digital ad networks to co-opt your CPU and get your machine to generate tokens on their behalf. And so we even saw this hit YouTube in the past, where YouTube ads would start to spin up cycles on people's CPUs on their computers to try and generate these digital tokens for the individuals who deployed these scripts, basically. And so this got actually really bad. There was even one case with an instance with an item called LoAPI or LoPI, which was physically deforming phones at the rate at which it was trying to generate crypto tokens. So it was causing the batteries to bulge and breaking people's devices. And so, you know, we look at that's kind of in the same category as malware as well, where you start to see a lot of the stuff, especially the fingerprinting is used whenever they're trying to decide what type of malware to send to you. For instance, if you're on a Windows device, they wouldn't want to send you to a page that imitates a Mac error screen or something like that. And vice versa, if you're on a Mac, they want to accidentally send you to a page that pushes a Windows download or something. And so they use those fingerprinting techniques or these, this inferring of your machine's abilities and properties to push specific types of malware. And so this is, again, something that Brave actively blocks against. I don't know if I've talked about that yet, but if you look in the top right-hand corner of the Brave browser, there's the Brave Shield. And when you open up the Brave Shields, we have toggle options inside there for malware, for blocking scripting, for blocking fingerprinting, third-party cookie access. So we talked about when you're going to website A.com, not letting website C.com load cookies onto your machine or, you know, siphon cookie information off. And so we kind of couple that malware and phishing, which is the targeted basically attacks that we see online, all into that little shields panel up inside the top right-hand corner of Brave itself. And that should be the same with desktop, mobile on Android and iOS as well. So the little shield up in the top right-hand corner is kind of the place to go to find that.
And I assume there's some people out there thinking like, well, but these scripts that are out there, they help serve me more relevant ads. And then I get to see advertising that I actually want to see. Is that necessarily true? And is it necessary to have these scripts in order to get relevant ads?
It's absolutely true. The scripts do yield better ads. But what we have to look at is at what cost. So for instance, the scripts do learn quite a bit of information about you. They learn your likes. They learn where you go. They learn, you know, what time you go to certain websites, how much time you spend on those sites. They understand what types of things you're searching for. And so they start to build these massive profiles about individuals, even if you don't have memberships on those sites. There was, you know, when Mark Zuckerberg was before Congress, or I think it was Congress, or maybe it was over in the UK recently, he was asked about shadow profiles. And these are large amounts of data that is being collected for individuals who aren't even members on the sites. And then once they become members, that information is then assigned to an identity. And so they're able to learn quite a bit about you. But the cost is that you're losing all of your privacy. Your information is kind of evaporating out into the ether for third parties to siphon up and sell. And so we saw even the case with Facebook where Cambridge Analytica was able to siphon off a bunch of information. And that was one individual case where they were accessing APIs on Facebook. But the reality is this kind of thing happens in mass all across the web. It's just a little harder to detect for individuals. There's not clear cut and dry examples of it. And so what Brave kind of looked at was, hey, the ads run the web. Ads are kind of the de facto standard. But ads are very dangerous these days because they're not just pixels. It's not like ads in the newspaper. When I open that up, I see, you know, maybe a vacuum cleaner advertisement or something. I'm just looking at ink on fiber at that point. But on the web, ads are programs. Ads sometimes carry malicious code inside them, and that code can be very hard to detect. And so it might be something like, you know, some code that looks like it's going to do color correction or something based upon the monitor or the DPI. In reality, it does some very unsavory things like siphons off information, could be things like your social security number, that type of stuff. And so what we kind of realized is that, first of all, users need to have the liberty to turn off ads and trackers because it's your machine, it's your privacy, this is up to you. And so we give that as the baseline experience inside Brave today. So if you go and download Brave, you open it up, you will not see ads and trackers. Ads and trackers are just blocked by default. But we also realize that ads and trackers, as bad as they've become, because they've been co-opted by, you know, bad actors, they did yield revenue for the publishers and content creators who put them on their sites. And so the sad thing is that because they've been co-opted by, you know, these bad actors, cleaning those out takes away from the revenue from the content creators and the publishers themselves, which is not a good thing. This doesn't create a sustainable model on the web. And so this is why Brave wasn't really attracted to the general idea of just being an ad blocker. And so what we decided was, well, we need to have some type of way for users to willingly give money back to their content, their favorite sites. And so we built in this in-situ wallet in Brave called Brave Payments. And so users can actually set it up to send a basic attention token, which I suspect we'll get into here in a little bit, but it's just a utility token. They can send some BAT, as it's called, to the content creators and YouTubers and Twitch streamers of their choosing to try and offset some of that revenue that's lost from blocking the ads itself. But then we even created some other programs like the Brave referral program at brave.com/refer, where content creators can create a referral link for the Brave browser and get $5 per user that comes over. So we're looking at ways that we can actually improve the system by putting money back into the publisher's pocket while also blocking the malicious ads. And so the next evolution of that is Brave ads or BAT ads, which are currently being tested right now with a group of early access volunteers. And so what these individuals are doing is they get a special version of the Brave browser. They opt into seeing ads, but the ad model in Brave is very different from the ad model that exists online today. So online today, all of your information is siphoned off by third parties. So you're getting great ad matching based upon no privacy whatsoever. In Brave ads and BAT ads, what happens is we actually have a local client side, meaning on your machine, machine learning module that is going to learn about you. It's going to learn what you like to do, what you like to go, what you like to search, but it's going to build up this reservoir knowledge on your machine in your control, and it doesn't leak that out to anybody. And then what happens is there's a catalog of ads that is routinely downloaded, which are, you know, 250 ads right now. And what it does is your machine looks at the ads that are being made available. It contrasts that with your own browsing habits and what you like to do, and it picks the best ads for you without sending any private information to anybody. So we've moved this transaction from being outside of your sphere of control to being on your machine itself. And so you get to have that high quality targeting if you want that, you know, the great ads that actually match your interests, all without the cost of losing your independence, your privacy, and your liberty and security.
We're going to take a quick break. You've been hearing this for almost 6 months now. That is how long Skillshare has been a loyal sponsor of Love Your Work. I appreciate it so much, and I'm thrilled so many of you have enjoyed the special offer Skillshare has had for us. Now, the rest of you, what are you waiting for? Skillshare's contract with Love Your Work is running out, so go get this deal. By the way, Skillshare is an online learning platform with more than 18,000 classes in business, marketing, entrepreneurship, technology, and more. You can learn about SEO, sharpen your writing skills, boost your productivity. You can learn about just about anything. So while you still can, join the millions of students already on Skillshare today with a special offer just for my listeners. Get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents. 99 cents. What can you get for 99 cents these days? Nothing except this deal. You really have no other choice of what you're going to do with your 99 cents. That's right. Skillshare is offering Love Your Work listeners 2 months of unlimited access to over 18,000 classes for just 99 cents. To sign up for this, go to skillshare.com/loveyourwork. Again, go to skillshare.com/loveyourwork to start your 2 months now. Okay, it is a nightmare scenario, but it does happen every day. Imagine you lost all of the data on your computer. I know it's not fun to think about. Maybe your hard drive failed. Maybe your computer was stolen. What are you going to do? I personally get my peace of mind knowing that all of my data is backed up to Backblaze. I know I can access any document on my computer from anywhere in the world, even on a mobile device, because it is all backed up. I know that if I lose my data, Backblaze can have me up and running quickly. Backblaze gives you unlimited space and no file size restrictions. And if you don't have the time to download a terabyte of data to recover everything, Backblaze will FedEx a hard drive or a USB stick. If you send it back, you get a full refund for that drive. So imagine you lost all of your data. Now imagine you're a Backblaze customer. You're up and running like nothing ever happened within about 24 hours. That is an insurance plan well worth $5 a month. Backblaze is offering Love Your Work listeners a free, fully featured 15-day trial at backblaze.com/loveyourwork. I am so glad they're doing this because this is totally going to save somebody's butt. Get a 15-day free trial at Backblaze at backblaze.com/loveyourwork. And I have already registered a couple of my sites, Katavi.net and Design for Hackers, and then also my YouTube channel I recently registered. And I noticed, because a while back I had tried to register one of the domains and I didn't finish, but then I went ahead and finished it the other day. I already have some BAT in my account from people contributing to my site. So people who have done that, thank you very much for that. Also, the referral program that you mentioned, if anybody's interested in downloading Brave, they can do so at katavi.net/brave. That will support me in the form of sending me $5 worth of BAT. So it's very cool what you're doing here. It sounds like you're getting the benefits of the ad tracking, but you're also protecting the privacy of the user in that the browser itself is learning about their preferences. The browser itself is serving up the ads. It's blocking the malicious ads that are coming from various sites. And it's not only about privacy. It's not only about blocking malicious ads, but it is also saving you a lot of bandwidth and time. I see a calculation of the amount of time that Brave has saved me. And can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, this is super popular. I mean, it's actually, it's something that's been somewhat viral in the past where people start to, you know, spread their stats online. So whenever you open up the Brave browser, whether on Android, iOS, or desktop, one of the first pages you see is your dashboard, and it shows you how many ads have been blocked, how many trackers have been blocked, how many connections have been upgraded, meaning you are going to establish an insecure connection to a server, allowing third parties to listen. But Brave preemptively upgraded that to a secure connection. So we track how often that happens as well. And then at the end, we quantify all of this. We reduce it down into minutes or hours saved, meaning you're not browsing the web you're not actually waiting for a page to load because it's trying to download some ads or trackers. Whenever you cut those out, you can drastically reduce the amount of data that you have to load to get to the content that you actually desire. And so there was a bit of research done that we link at the front of brave.com, I think it is, talking about $23 on average for mobile plans in particular saved each month. And this is about 50% of the data that you load across the web is comprised of ads and trackers. And that's what kind of blew my mind when I first saw this a long time ago. I was like, I knew the issue was bad, but 50% of the data on the web is not at all essential to the content you're looking for. It's not the page. It's not the central information. It is just ads and trackers. And so it kind of had a real tangible fiscal impact on me. I was like, my goodness, you know, the problem is not even that we're being tracked and monitored and followed around, but in many cases, we're paying to be tracked and monitored and followed around because we're paying for the data. And so Brave, by removing this stuff from the equation, gives you, as you said, it gives you the security and the privacy, but it also drastically reduces your data consumption, which increases your browsing as well. We've seen between 2 and 8 times faster browsing in Brave than in Chrome, for instance, because of the exclusion of these malicious ads and trackers.
And I love the name Basic Attention Token, because it really drives home that, you know, attention is the currency that is being sold online a lot of times. Can you talk to me a little bit about the Basic Attention Token and the way that it is rethinking the economics of attention online?
Absolutely. Yeah, this was the big vision that Brendan had from the early days. He was, you know, thinking about calling it the Brave Attention Token or the Brave Coin, I think, or something like that at the time. But the realization was that attention is a limited commodity. I mean, we don't have an indefinite amount of attention. We have only so many hours in the day, only so many days in our life. There's an analogous idea from Scott Hanselman at Microsoft, who has the website keysleft.com. Which is a call for people to be more judicious with their emailing, with their communication, because you only have a finite number of keys left in your life. And they try to do some quantification of that, let you know exactly how many keys you have left, and so you can make wiser decisions. But the same thing goes with attention. And so when we look at, you know, going online, you try to, you know, visit a website to read or research something, you have got so many ads and jiggly reduce your waistline, you know, animations around the sides of web pages and those 4 pictures that appear at the bottom that have some type of thing that looks like can be popped. I don't know. It's just the weird pictures that you find all across the web, and they're all hijacking your attention, and we're getting nothing for it. In most cases, I mean, you can argue that we're getting some content for it, but does it really justify the trade-off? And so attention is this thing that we all have that we're not getting paid for today. And so what Brave kind of forwarded as an alternative plan was first the construction of this utility token to allow us to leverage all the benefits of the blockchain technology, which we all keep hearing about, in this new digital advertising model. And so we kind of envisioned a vastly different advertising model. And there's a quick video for this for anybody who's interested. If they go to basicattentiontoken.org, there's about a 3-minute video there that explains this concisely. But effectively, rather than giving all of this money to a bunch of middlemen who are passing ads through different networks and that type of stuff, Brave actually sees the equation can be far more simpler. And so we could actually say, you know what? We can show ads to willing users who opt into the optional ad network or component. And those ads can pay 70% of the revenue to the user itself, to the person who's spending their attention on this this page, on this application, on this file. Basically, your attention can be exhausted in many different ways. But we kind of envisioned that the user should get paid for that and paid handsomely for that, 70%. And even whenever we move forward.
So wait, hold on. Yeah. Essentially getting paid for looking at ads.
If you want to, yes. So the baseline of Brave is no ads, no trackers. And we give you a cryptographic wallet that you can then fund and support the sites that you visit. We also have given out millions of dollars in BAT grants to individuals as well, where we're just dropping BAT into your wallet, essentially, so you can turn that around and give it to your favorite content creators. But then we have this new project in work right now. It's in motion and becoming very, very soon, which allows you to opt into using that client-side machine-based learning ad system, which doesn't leak any information about you. And then the money actually coming in from that for those ads, 70% of it goes to you into your wallet. And so this is a drastically different model than what everyone else has, where you are just this product that's being shuffled around from site to site, and everyone else is trying to make money off of you. this is you actually getting a cut of that change.
So this, as many as 70 tracking scripts that are on some sites, this as much as $23 a month of data that is coming in the form of these tracking scripts is really just middlemen. And these middlemen are running the ad tech online, and they're basically, they're not incentivized to even give accurate data to people, to companies who are advertising on their networks. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's the other big thing that people don't realize as well, is the amount of ad fraud that is in the current system, the incumbent system. And so CNBC and Business Insider both had written about in 2017 between 16 and 19 billion with a B in ad fraud, online ad fraud. And so we look at just how big this space is, how much money is moving around in this space online. And when you look at basically how the current systems work, there's just an incredible amount of ad fraud with people stacking ads or misreporting the clicks or trying to trick users into clicking on things or opening up windows behind the active window and letting multiple ads load inside there. And so there's just a lot of different ways that people steal money from advertisers. And that's another area where Brave said, hey, we can actually do this quite a bit better. And having control over the browser itself gives us a very unique position in combating a lot of that fraud. And so when we look at as much as nearly $20 billion in ad fraud, it kind of makes sense that, hey, we could not only save advertisers a lot of money, reduce the amount of fraud, we could definitely loop in the end user and give them a sizable portion of the lion's share, to kind of play on the pun, of the actual revenue coming in.
And these economics of ads running the internet really shapes the way that media works as well. So it basically means that you want eyeballs on your page. What happens when somebody gets to your page is not quite so important. So that means that if you have a misleading headline, some sort of clickbait or something that's very incendiary, that's the important thing, is to get the click, get people onto the site. After that, it doesn't really matter so much. Now, I read the Basic Attention Token white paper, and a thing that I found was interesting there is that you are calculating how to distribute the basic attention token based upon the amount of time that a user is spending on a page. So is that correct? And can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, there's a concept called the attention metrics. And so I think we refer to them by that title in there as well, which is basically, the kind of measuring that user's engagement with the page. And so it's, one metric is the time spent on the page. Another metric is the user traveling around the page. Am I scrolling up and down? Another metric are, what am I interacting with my mouse and stuff? So there's quite a few ways to see, for the browser to learn, well, how does the user interact with this content? Can we try and summarize and quantify the degree to which the user interacted with this? For instance, if an ad was visible, was the ad occluded by some other element on the page? And there's a lot of questions that are not adequately addressed by the current system that we feel like could be drastically improved upon with a slightly different digital advertising model.
Okay, so as I was thinking about this this idea of distributing BAT according to attention, do you have any thoughts about sites such as, like dictionary.com or something like that, where the value isn't so much in the amount of attention that you're spending on the site because you get your answer right away? Is that something that has been thought about in terms of thinking about this basic attention token?
Absolutely. I mean, we even considered sites that you may visit very rarely that you might want to support. For instance, there's quite a few people who maybe don't go to Wikipedia every day, but they firmly believe in the ideas and the purpose behind it. So they want to make sure they give routinely each month. This is kind of the Patreon model, right? And so since the early days, whenever we actually launched the built-in Brave wallet, we actually gave you the ability to opt into doing pinned giving. And so you could say, for instance, I really like Dictionary, which I actually do really love dictionary.com and the related thesaurus. I use these probably half a dozen times a day when I'm trying to look up obscure words and everything. And so you could actually say, I want to give 5% of my monthly budget to dictionary.com, whether I visit their site or not. And so you could do this. I do this also with YouTube streamers who I really enjoy. And so you could actually opt out of the default attention or kind of a distribution of attention. So they'll say you spent 10% of your attention this month on websites X and Y. So 10% of your monthly allocation will go to websites X and Y proportionally to the amount of attention you spent. You can actually opt in to say, no, I want to give a flat 5 or 10% to this site, regardless how much I time spend on it, regardless how many times I visit it. We kind of feel like that gives a much better, you know, kind of array of options for users whose browsing habits may differ, you know, month to month, day to day.
So in a way, you're kind of turning the web into a Netflix in a way. You can kind of spend a certain amount of money each month, and then the creators of the content that you consume, they are compensated based upon some portion of the collective attention that people put towards their content, or if they manually choose to do so.
Absolutely. Yeah. By default, they get whatever percentage of my attention was, you know, distributed to their content. So if I spend 10% of my time watching a Fortnite streamer or something on YouTube, then 10% of my monthly budget will go to that individual unless I opt out of supporting them, or unless I decide to give a flat rate each month. And so we kind of see it as, it's just kind of so many benefits too, because, you know, years ago I joined a gym, which is kind of the first line in every horror story that someone hears eventually. And, I joined this gym and I was a member there for a couple of years. And then my wife and I moved out of state and we had no idea that I never closed my membership there. And so I continued to pay monthly fees for about a year before I realized it. And so that's one of the problems with all of the walled gardens where everyone says, okay, well, you can actually just pay us directly. Well, you wind up having a bunch of different accounts that you have to manage in parallel to one another and make sure that you're constantly monitoring them for, you know, the amount of money you're spending there, whether or not it is justified based upon the amount of attention you're spending there. And so with the Brave model inside Brave Payments, it just tracks your activity for the month prior, the amount of time spent on each domain. You can opt in or opt out of different domains. You can switch from being a percentage-based giving to a fixed-based giving. And we kind of see this as just a much better model for the web moving forward, as opposed to these individual memberships that have to be maintained and kind of coddled on their own. And just it's a drastically different model that we really think is going to do quite well and has been doing quite well. I mean, we're looking at 5 million users by the end of the year. So it probably sooner.
Now, is there a reason why this didn't exist before? Is there something inherent in blockchain technology that explains why this wasn't happening before? Is there something about blockchain technology that makes Brave possible?
Well, the blockchain itself, that technology was fairly recent. I mean, that's kind of came out of the Bitcoin movement and such. And so we didn't quite have that to begin with. Of course, having the computing power that we have today makes everything quite a bit bigger. The connectedness makes everything quite a bit more reliable. You know, with the blockchain, it's important that you have a nice distribution of nodes with redundancy and that information kind of being maintained in a decentralized fashion. So we didn't quite have that in the past. There have been other people that have tried similar models. And there's been, you know, even some applications in the past that were, you know, pay to surf, as they're called, where you download it and you get to use the internet. Like, I think Net Zero was like this a long time ago, where they show you ads and that's your trade-off for using their software for free, which Brave doesn't do that. Brave, again, is the no ads by default. You can opt into ads if you want to. But again, the amount of fraud that has been prevalent in the past has kind of made this very difficult for people to do. So the kind of checks and balances that are afforded by blockchain technology is going to make this quite a bit easier moving forward as well.
Okay. I've been using Brave. I totally love it. It saves a ton of bandwidth. It makes things go much faster. I also love that I'm earning a little bit as a creator from people who are contributing to Brave. And I would encourage people again to sign up at cadavy.net/brave. Now, I am also excited from the standpoint of an advertiser. I would love to be able to advertise on Brave sometime soon or earn for being served ads. When are those things going to be happening?
So we just recently, this month, we released a to a group of, I think it's about, it's literally maybe a couple dozen or so. There's a small group of volunteers who said, hey, we would like to experiment with the Brave ads. We want to give you some initial feedback. And so we had this small private test, because the test itself is also meant to train our machine learning module, which means these individuals have opted into having their browser activity recorded and sent to Brave to train this model that we're going to be then building into future browsers or future releases for users in the future. So we have this very small controlled test right now, which is seeing how well this works. We have about 250 ads that are preloaded into the browser. And then as these users browse the web, they can decide, hey, I want to see one ad an hour, five ads an hour, basically determine what type of activity they want and what type of degree they want to be experiencing the Brave Ads network. And so we're going to be looking at doing a couple more trials with that, kind of expanding the perimeter just a little bit each time, bringing in more and more people. And then we're definitely aiming at having ads wrapped up and out by the end of this year, I believe, is what the current expectation is.
Great. Jonathan Sampson from Brave, thank you so much for coming on the show to talk to us about Brave. I'm very excited about it. I hope that everybody will go sign up for it. Is there anything else that you'd like for people to do, or where can they find you?
I would love for them to support you and content creators like you. So definitely use your referral link and make sure that whenever they have Brave downloaded, that they accept the free grants that we're giving out each month now, and that they funnel it back into the sites that matter most to them. And we would love to hear from them. We are at Brave on Twitter, at Basic Attention. I think actually at Attention Token on Twitter, basicattentiontoken.org. But definitely reach out, let us know what your thoughts and your feedback is. And we'd love to kind of move forward in a dialogue and communication with the actual, you know, users themselves.
Jonathan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Is Love Your Work helping you find the intersection on your love and money Venn diagram? Does it bring you the inspiration and motivation to make you into the person that you want to be? If so, we, together, you and I, can make this the show that we want it to be. I'm trying to make a nourishing and thoughtful show, and I could use your help with that. Please donate to the show. Just a coffee a month will help support the hosting and production of this show. Just a coffee a month will help spread Love Your Work's message, helping more people live a balanced life with a healthy definition of success. To donate, visit our Patreon page at katavi.net/donate. Patreon is a platform that lets you support creators like me, vote with your dollars, and keep Love Your Work going at katavi.net/donate. As a thank you, you'll get early access, bonus content, and a discount on Love Your Work merchandise. Learn more at katavi.net/donate. That's katavi.net/donate. Love Your Work is brought to you in part by our Patreon supporters, such as mini sponsor Roxana Maynard of Agility Alchemist at agilityalchemist.com, and top supporters such as Jeffrey Mason and Vitas Pankovicius. This has been Love Your Work, and I'm David Katavi. The theme music for this show is At Sea by Durena from the album About Everything and More, by arrangement with Deep Elm Records at deepelm.com. Love Your Work is a production of Katavi, Inc.